Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much. Joining me, thanks for hanging around with me. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. But then you knew that, didn't you? You're going to be glad you hung out with us today because Jim Ostroff is with us. Jim is sitting in for the missing in action Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. But actually, we enjoy Joan being here, but when she's not here, it's not a bad thing because we got Jim Ostroff. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and he's our good friend. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Jim. Always a pleasure to be with everyone.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. The news this week from Kiplinger on the front page is that credit market worries are rising. Now, why is that? Is that because, you know, in many ways you'd think, well, haven't we already heard all that there is to hear about the credit meltdown and everything? But there's still some shoes that we're afraid haven't dropped out there, aren't there?
Well, yeah, and you know, the thing is that the big issue here is that really that, you know, banks are having problems with loans and. The main thing here is that there is a large amount, about $400 billion in so-called commercial paper that's coming due in a few months. And the worry is that, you know, basically banks will have no alternative but to try to roll it over, you know, and then try to write it off.
Well, you saw that somebody took, was it Bank of America, took a $1 billion write-down recently, I think. I saw that. And,
right, they
and
did.
And they're going to lay off some people. Apparently, you know, this is going to hit some of the big banks pretty hard. But I also saw yesterday, I think this week at least, that Countrywide is going to send out letters to their mortgage holders. Our mortgagees, I should say,
right? Yeah,
the mortgagees, and say, you know, let's try to work this out. What can you afford? And
well,
and Jim,
right.
I predicted that
mm-hmm.
4 months ago, three
right.
months ago.
Right.
I said, you know what? People have jobs. The houses are still there.
There, right.
The banks don't want them back. How stupid is it to foreclose on people when they're not going to be able to sell those houses? They're going to take a bloodbath if they try to. The economy will go into shambles. Why not work out these loans? You gave them the bad loans to start with. It's your responsibility, Countrywide, to work it out with them, and I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I think you and I may have been talking at that time, but I seem to recall you saying that, and it makes eminent sense, because what's the alternative? A bloodbath.
It'd be different if people were unemployed, if we had 10% unemployment, people who were defaulting didn't have a job. That's a different situation. You know,
no,
if that's the case, you know, let's go ahead and wrap this up and part company and everybody has to do what they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when people have jobs, it makes no sense to kick them out of their house.
No, it doesn't, and it's lose, 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 and they
that's
know
exactly
it.
Right.
And that's why they're trying to make some effort.
But the problem I think we got now, I really don't think the problem is as much with the individuals, although there is some of that, because as you know there are a number of adjustable rate mortgages, apparently quite a few of them, they're going to be rolling over to a new percentage rate in the next 18 months or so.
That's right. Yes.
And that's where that's one of the shoes that have to drop. That has to
that's
drop.
Right. It does.
But I think the thing that's scaring people is that a lot of the Wall Street folks don't know, they really don't know how bad it's going to hit some of these big houses.
Oh, and that's it, the unknown.
And when I say houses, I'm not talking about residences, folks.
No,
I'm talking
about
financial houses.
Houses. And that, absolutely right, it's the big unknown. How many billions may we have to swallow? And that's a big reason of concern. They don't know.
You know, Jim, I'm looking at one of my favorite books by Charles McKay, written in 1848, I think it is. extraordinary popular delusions and the madness of crowds.
Mm-hmm.
And he described tulipa mania, the South Sea Bubble, and the Pacific and the South Pacific scheme.
That's right.
Or the South Sea Bubble, I guess I should say, Mississippi scheme, the South Sea Bubble. And if you go back and read that, you say, okay, this is like the prologue to the SNL meltdown of the 80s.
That's right.
It's a prologue to the dot-bomb era of the 90s.
That's right.
And it's a prologue to the subprime meltdown. I mean, don't we ever learn anything, Jim?
We do, but we have to keep relearning it. No, but absolutely, that is the point. You might say there's really nothing new about this, but it's just that I guess there are people, well, there is greed, and also really more than that, sort of a rationalization that's taking place that say it can't be that bad, or okay, I'll get out before the bottom drops out, and it doesn't happen. But absolutely, there's nothing new here. You see it time and time and time again, and my one and only prediction is that this will happen again. And it will.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, hope is not the only thing that springs eternal. Greed springs eternal, too, doesn't it?
No, it absolutely does.
And that's what happened. They wanted more and more new products, new securities, new opportunities to securitize. And they did it. And I mean, I remember, Jim, 4 or 5 years ago, 6, 8 or 10 years ago, I guess maybe more like about 5 to 8 years ago, hearing realtors talking about and mortgage brokers talking about these new loans coming out where you can actually borrow 110% of the equity. I mean, 100%, 10% of the value of the homes. And,
right.
And all that. And they thought this was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And I remember thinking, have you suspended the laws of economics somehow?
Yeah. More and more, again, a push towards subprime loans.
Yeah.
And it's understood maybe you're helping people having somewhat of a tough time, but basically extending them loans that, in the best of times, will be difficult to pay off. Yeah, and that's what we're facing.
Well, and if people, but what we've got to do is, this is going to be a long-term workout, isn't it? I mean, this is, even if the companies, the mortgage companies do rework these mortgages.
Right.
Many of these people need to be figuring out a way to get divested of these houses. Many people are in way more house than they can afford and probably need.
Right, and the values are not going to really rise much.
That's exactly right.
Can't count on it.
Stand by, quick break. 20 after. Right back with these messages with our good friend Jim Ostroff. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'm with you.
She was a bebop baby on a hard day's night. She was hanging on Johnny. He was hoping. Don't let your trouble.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's the flagship. That's a 10-year-old website this month. Thank you very much. We're happy to mark that milestone. And, of course, next month, as you know, as you may have heard me say, next month is the 10th anniversary of the Small Business Advocate Show. We got a big milestone coming up there for all the things that we do here on the air. And looking forward to celebrating that. We're going to take a whole week and celebrate the whole week. You know how much we like doing that. So gird your loins for that, ladies and gentlemen. Just giving you fair warning there. But anyway, at smallbusinessadvocate.com, you can find our show, all the different ways, including how you can podcast it. If you want to take fair use possession of any of the interviews that we do, we give you that ability, and you can read articles to your little heart's content. Thousands of those, thousands of archives of past interviews, all laid out for you in the categories that you can, if you got something on your mind, just go there and look at the category that you're interested in and find a Brain Trust member, an article or an archive on that topic. Lots and lots of stuff there. You can subscribe to my free newsletter, which I certainly encourage you to do. Please subscribe to my free newsletter. It comes on Sunday afternoon. And if you decide you don't like it, it's easier to unsubscribe than it is to subscribe. We're automatic. You can do it yourself. And so we hope you'll do that. And we think our newsletter will get you ready for the week ahead. At least that's what our subscribers have told us. And then, of course, our blog is right there at smallbusinessadvocate.com or jimsblog.biz. You can go there as well. We update that every weekday. And then we have our knowledge base, askjim.biz. I like telling you about that because that's where you can get small business answers right now. If you got a pain, you got a little itch, a little frustration that you need to take care of, go there and ask a question at askjim.biz and see if you don't get an answer. And if you don't get one right there, then you can ask us by email from there, and we'll answer that for you. Jim Ostroff is our guest. We're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. And the big news is, continues to be the credit situation, the credit challenges. It's not just a real estate challenge. It's not just a U.S. financial challenge. It's a global financial challenge, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, we are in a global economy. And the thing is, they're all different factors. People holding these same, ultimately these same loans in one way or another, or of course financing U.S. debt. So the world has an interest in how this is resolved, and a lot is in the balance.
But isn't that kind of a good thing, though, Jim? When something, even a mistake like this, even something that was as unfortunate as what we've gotten ourselves into now. Isn't it kind of a good thing? Isn't it kind of like the insurance industry, where you spread the risk over a lot more people, and maybe it throws a damper on everybody, but at least it doesn't take one sector down. If this had been, Jim, you and I both know, and I, of course I don't think this could have ever happened if banks weren't selling their mortgages upstream to securitization.
Yeah, yeah.
But if this were all locally held stuff, without being securitizing it, or even if it was just in the United States,
mm-hmm.
we'd be in serious stuff here in the United States, wouldn't we, right now?
As they say, deep doo doo right now.
But, yeah.
Because
yep,
there
yep.
is, again, there, you know, the people talk and say, oh, this and that about globalization, but it does offer a bit more insurance because it mitigates the risk somewhat, and really helps ensure that we'll work our way out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things that's going on, one of the factors that is factoring in here is the reaction of the Fed.
Well,
the Federal
yeah.
Reserve Board and our monetary organization, our bank, the Federal Reserve, and
right.
they are doing some things that have helped. They've provided liquidity to the marketplace. That's helped out a lot of people who needed that to cover some shorts. They lowered the Fed funds rate and the discount rate.
That's right.
In the last 45 days or so. There's news this week that they might actually lower the discount rate one more time, or at least again. And they're meeting, the Fed's meeting next week to consider what to do about the Fed funds rate, and
right.
which is what gives rise to prime rate.
That's right.
And there's a lot of people believe that they'll cut the Fed funds rate a little bit more.
Well, I should say it's very likely they'll do so, certainly before the end of this year, at least one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And because they absolutely realize here the real downside of just hunkering down and doing nothing. If nothing else, there's really the big psychological concern and, you know, that it would sow. So they are acting, but of course their tools are somewhat limited. You know, if they could make a lot more deep cuts in interest rates, well, that'll weaken the dollar even further.
Well, not only that, it'll drive inflation. That's
and
the, that's
drives
the...
up inflation. So it's a delicate balance.
The horns of the dilemma that the Fed is on, Jim, as you're indicating,
yeah.
is the economy is one of the horns. How's it doing? And the inflation is the other one. And you know, if one's going down and the other one's going up. And you know, how do you balance all that? How do you, you know, the instruments, as you very aptly mentioned, their instruments are not only limited; they're kind of blunt.
They're very blunt, and you just hope for the best.
Yeah.
But the real concern is over here is that they do these things, and the economy slows as well.
Yeah. So it's a challenge, and we'll continue to keep checking on this. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the economic forecasts that Kiplinger has identified for the next several months that you and I will be applying to our businesses. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Jim Ostroff.
Now can you tell me?
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kipling Editors. Jim, one last thing on this credit issue.
Right.
And that is whether any of this is impacting small businesses. Some people presume that it is. Mm-hmm. Some people think that it is.
I don't think
that's what small business owners are reporting. I myself am not seeing it at all. Mm-hmm. I think if you're a small business owner and you've got a viable business model and a proposal that makes sense to a bank, I don't think you're going to have any problems. And one of the reasons I think you're not going to is because the banks that you do business with who maybe originated many of the loans that are a problem right now, those loans aren't on the bank's books anymore.
That's right.
They took a fee and sold them upstream.
That's right. They did.
So those banks are not in trouble anymore. Now the challenge that where the chickens come home to roost in those communities is when the real estate prices go down because people have lost their homes. And that can be a problem. But as far as working capital for your business from your local banks, that's not a problem right now.
Pretty much, you got a plan, it's good, you'll probably get money.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Jim, let's move on and talk about the forecasts. You guys are still forecasting 08 to for the U.S. to have a 2% growth in GDP.
Around 2%, yeah. Just slow and steady.
Yeah. What's wrong with 2% on $13 trillion? That's a lot of production, you know?
It is, and also I got to say, you know, so many other countries, or even this one years ago, situations like we're seeing right now, and housing would sink the economy. You know, it's still chugging along. It's very strong.
The economy, the resiliency of this economy, continues to amaze me, Jim. And I think it's because of the fundamentals. I think part of it is because of the global aspect of our economy. I think it's because of the structures that we have in place, not only in big businesses but in small businesses.
Oh, yeah.
Small businesses are doing just-in-time inventory now more than ever before. That helps the economy to move more nimbly.
It does, and of course, even advances in technology enable small companies and individuals to utilize those things that make them stronger, leaner, and meaner, and able to withstand problems.
Jim, inflation is something you guys are, and I hope you're right about this, that you're saying it's holding steady. What is it, about 2.5% right now?
It's about that now.
I know the Fed would like for it to be under 2.
Right. Yeah, they would. And, you know, we think it's going to rise very slowly and by a tad next year, you know, perhaps on inflation.
We all need for inflation to kind of hold its own.
Yeah.
We don't need it to spike on us because that takes some of the tools away from the Fed to help the economy in a tough time right now.
That's right. No, it's true.
Yeah. Job growth. You guys say that weaker in the second half, but 1.3 million in 2008. What's wrong with that? I mean, here's what amazes me, Jim. Where are those people coming from? We already have 2 million jobs going unfilled right now.
Right. I know. And I got to say, also, we think that's a bit conservative. You know, 1.3, it may be a bit more than that. But, no, it's a still a job creation engine, and most of that comes from small businesses, no question.
That's right. And, you know, Jim, with that kind of job demand and with the lack of people to fill those jobs that we have right now, that's going to continue to be good news for the technology sector, I think.
Well,
because more and more of us are going to have to automate, because we can't find the people to do the work.
Well, that's right, and absolutely. And ultimately, that drives down costs and makes businesses more efficient.
That's right.
It does.
That's exactly
absolutely
right. That's another reason why the economy, in my opinion, is so resilient right now.
Right.
Jim, quickly, before we go to the break, I hope you're right about this, and it makes me sick to think that I'm happy about what your forecast is for crude oil. Tell us what it is.
Well, you know, crude oil, which is now in the high 80s, we believe is going to end the year at what seems like a low $75, maybe 72, 73.
Isn't there something sick about me being happy about that?
Well, I know, and it's strange for us too, but there's some hope yet.
That's a weird feeling to be tickled to death and praying that Kiplinger is right, that oil is going to go down to $75.
Right.
Stand by, quick break, 20 till, right back with Jim Ostroff. A lot more to come after these messages.
Hand balanced on the precipice, the moment must reveal.
We're back. It's 17 till. A little bit of Steely Dan for you there. Is it getting any better than that? I don't know it. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He is actually not just our guest. He's an old friend of ours and a fairly regular person on the show. Great resource for us. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we always like having him on the show. We miss Joan, but we really like gives us a great opportunity to visit with Jim. Jim, I like telling the audience about your website, Kiplinger.com, because it's such an outstanding website. I encourage people to go there and use it to their advantage, like mine. A lot of the information you have there is free.
Right.
But there's a lot more in the back there of Kiplinger.com. If you'd like to have more information, and you get that if you subscribe to one of their newsletters, one of their letters, I should say, which includes the Kiplinger letter that Jim and I work off of every week, and Joan and I do too. That's the weekly publication. And then they have three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter. And those are all, as you might imagine, focused on those three areas. And those come every other week by email, and all four of the letters come by email or by snail mail. I get it both ways, Jim.
Right.
Jim, I get it both ways because I just can't get enough of Kiplinger.
Well, thank you.
And then there's the magazine, the Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, which is available on newsstands. And there's a phone number, Jim, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, if I could. There's a toll-free number, which is 800-544-0155.
So check that out, folks. And they got a 30-day free trial. I worked hard to get you that free trial, folks, so take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Jim, let's move over and talk about what consumers are thinking about some of the products that we have today. You know, we've had some of the beef scares. We had the lead scares from China. We've had a lot of different problems with some of the products that we've been having. What's Congress working on? This frightens me a little bit, Jim, because anytime government reacts to something like this, it rarely turns out well.
Well, I mean, basically they're working on law that would beef up the Consumer Product Safety Commission, at least its ability to basically review products, assess products, and determine whether recalls are necessary. But, you know, the real thing here is that, you know, most recalls are initiated by companies themselves because they don't want to take a chance on any problems. They know it hurts sales. And the thing is, too, like in this case, the CPSC has to look after more than 15,000 type of items and products. And it's the same thing even on the agriculture side with food safety. There's no way government can really inspect all of this. They do rely heavily on businesses to put in quality control. And the thing, honestly, most businesses, almost all of them, recognize it's in their own enlightened self-interest to make sure there are no problems.
Yeah.
They are so private business is the cop on the street.
And it still bothers me, though, Jim, when the Congress sees something like this and they do one of their knee jerks. I know that they mean well, but they often do it poorly. I really like the marketplace policing itself.
Right. They do it poorly, and then they have to come back and try to fix it again. And you see that time after time.
Yeah, and then it's just one bad thing after another. Jim, let's move down a little bit of healthcare. one of the phenomena that's been going on across the country in the last few years has been the loss of so many privately owned small business pharmacies. And it's just become an epidemic across the country. This is one of the areas that I don't have any, you know, I can talk a lot of people, I can help a lot of people to fight off the big box companies, but pharmacies are one of those areas that I don't have a lot to say about it, because basically the pharmacies have depended so much on government business, on the Medicare, Medicaid business.
Right.
And when they cut those payments to them for those products, and they stretched out the payment to them for their cash, it just put these small pharmacies out of business, so many of them.
It has, and now basically Congress is looking to require that, you know, Medicare basically pay claims to small pharmacies within 2 weeks, within 14 days. And if they are the so-called, those are those that are filed electronically, non-electronically, they have to pay within 30 days. That helps with cash flow, and so many smaller stores, and particularly pharmacies, you know, really go be week to week, and so that'll help a bit. But no question, there has been and continues huge consolidation within that industry. It's very hard on small.
Well, and I'm afraid that what we've been reporting on today is too little, too late.
Yeah,
for many people. Jim, let's move down and talk about the ports. You got some news there on the ports on some ways to alleviate cargo backup. Folks, even if you don't ship anything by water, stay with us. We got some other things to mention about this. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, the thing is, of course, here that a lot more import and export business, and it's at a record, and it will set a new record next year and the one after that. Import and export. The ports themselves have been trying to expand to accommodate this additional business, but in addition, you need all the support functions around all of these ports. So, on one hand, you have some new facilities, new ports, Prince Rupert in Colombia,
right.
British Columbia, I should say, and there are others, but they're in many places around Jacksonville, Savannah, Charleston, Wilmington,
right.
They're building a lot of new support facilities.
Alternative ports. But, folks, think about rail today. I'm not trying to take anything away from the trucking industry, folks, but the rail industry is growing, and one of the reasons is because a ton of goods can be shipped for one quarter of the energy that it takes to drive it over the road. So rail, look into having your products delivered by rail. It might save you some money. Tintel, stay with us. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling with our good friend, Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Jim, one of the things you guys report on is the increasing proliferation of Internet phone calling, voice over IP, voice over Internet
VoIP.
Protocol, VoIP.
Right.
I have used it some. This year we bought a new phone system for my office, the first one in 15 years, and actually, 15 years, I guess, and that phone system, we bought it knowing that it had, with the intention of it having the ability to one day convert to IP.
That's right.
So that phone system we still use Twisted Copper for our connection now, but at the point in time that I want to, and we may do it one line at a time, but we can add voice over IP, because Jim, in our lifetime, Twisted Copper will be a thing of the past.
Twisted Copper and in some ways even fiber optic.
Yeah.
But the thing here is that again, the paradigm has changed. I mean, using VoIP, even right now, you could cut your phone bills by even a third. The quality is getting much better,
and the reliability.
That's what I'm saying. Reliability. You know, you can't take a chance in many business on losing calls forever. But again, there's some new Microsoft software basically that is really enabling this to be installed fairly easily reliably. And I think the sound quality is just about the same as a regular phone line. And that's the way it is. And,
Jim, when I go on the road, I use internet protocol. I use voice over internet to connect to my network.
Oh yeah,
to do my show.
And the bottom line is, it's not only cost saving, but far more productive and efficient. From anywhere, you can just be right there, essentially,
well,
from
the
your
quality,
laptop.
Well, the quality of voice over IP is better. See, when I go on the road, in the old days, I used Twisted Copper but it was a regular phone line. It wasn't even ISDN like I do my show on when I'm in my studio and in my office. And on the road, I used to use plain telephone line because that was the most ubiquitous connection I could find.
Right.
But with voice over IP, the quality is comparable to ISDN. In fact, some people think it's better.
It's
more ubiquitous. It's available now. So that's the way to go. In fact, the people who make the codecs to connect between a broadcast and network, they're not even developing anything that's associated with Twisted Copper anymore. All of their R&D is going into IP.
It is, and that's the trend, and that's the way it's going to be. And then soon, of course, at homes.
Yep, absolutely. Homes are moving not only towards voice over IP, but homes are moving towards wireless.
Wireless VoIP.
You don't call places anymore, you call people.
That's right, you do. You do.
More and more. Yeah. Jim, let's move over and talk about... quickly, we got a couple of minutes left. We got some challenges in northern Iraq and the Turkey border, don't we?
The Kurds
and the Turks just don't want to play well together, do they?
No. And the thing is, you keep having these the Kurdish militias that are crossing the border.
That's a good point, Jim. It's not all the Kurds. No, they're a group of terrorists up there, aren't they?
There are, and they are the ones. That are inciting some real bad things here. I mean, Turkey actually has shown enormous restraint in holding back, and we think that at some point Turkey will launch some real strikes, but they'll be really fairly limited in scope. I mean, the U.S. is trying to broker this, but the most we can do is basically say, okay, Iraqi government, it's yours to do, and they have enough troubles on their own.
And Jim, the problem with this, some people might be saying, why should I care about this? Well, folks, this is another one of those little impacts, right. Another one of those little effects on the price of oil.
And it's a big one. In fact, the run-up to nearly $90 was due almost entirely to the belief that there could be military action in that area.
If you want to pray for oil prices to come down, pray for the Turks and the Kurds to get along.
Absolutely. even as it is, we don't think oil's going to hit $100 a barrel anytime next few weeks, mainly because demand is easing. And assuming there's no problem in Iraq, but other than that, $100 is on the radar screen for next summer.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, everyone.
We'll see you next time. Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, he's the best, as you can tell. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.